The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Joe Austin, and I'm your host and producer for today's episode of Legal Matters, an original program produced in the Triangle Radio Reading Service studio. For the next half hour, we'll be exploring topics to champion your legal rights to obtain equal access and full participation in your community and to achieve your goals of independent living. Every fourth Tuesday of each month, you can find us here providing news and information from federal and state agencies, as well as nonprofit organizations that promote information on law supporting independent living. And in today's episode, we've got a special guest, Steve Murphy. Steve, welcome.
Good morning.
We're very glad to have you. Steve is one of our newest members of the Triangle Radio Reading Service Board. We're very glad to have him. And, Steve, you have had a plethora of experiences in the area of accommodations for disabled people, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. Can you give us some biographical highlights?
Yes, sir. I grew up in Henderson, North Carolina, which is about an hour north of Raleigh. And my work history has expanded over about 40 years. There's work history before blindness and work history after blindness. I worked approximately 10 years in the private sector in a variety of jobs. And then once I started losing my vision, went back to college, became educated, and started my work in the public sector. I worked 25 years with the North Carolina Division of Services for the Blind. I started as a rehabilitation counselor in Fayetteville, and then ended up moving to Raleigh and taking a management position for the Raleigh District Office. I retired there in 2013. And then had the opportunity to go to work at RLCB, which was formerly known as Raleigh Lions Clinic for the Blind. I worked there part-time as their director of rehabilitation services. Still had that passion burning. And left there this past summer to finally retire. But, you know, retiring is hard to do, so I'm doing some volunteer work right now with a company called Insightful Visionaries that does programming for the blind and visually impaired.
Well, that's a lot of ground for us to cover, because we're going to do some backing and filling here and find out a little bit more about all of that, or as much of it as we can. So, Steve, you lost your vision as an adult.
Well, actually, as an adult, I found out that I had become legally blind as a teenager. I remember when I was 16 and I got my driver's license, and I left the house one night, and my mom said, "Well, Steve, I know you don't see well at night, so be careful out there." And I had no clue what she was talking about, because no one had ever told me that I had retinitis pigmentosa. So that night, you know, I get in my car, and just to spite my mom, I put on a pair of sunglasses and ride around. I can see at night. What is she talking about? But when I was probably about 18, I was at my optometrist, and he was doing an examination of my eyes, and he told me he saw some retinitis pigments in my peripheral vision. But at that time, I had great central vision and was not having any major problems, you know, in terms of doing my normal life activities. But by the time I approached my 20s, I found myself working as a warehouseman. And, you know, I was tripping over things and bumping into things. And I noticed on rainy nights I had problems seeing how to drive. So, you know, in talking with him that day, he told me, "Well, you know, you have a condition, you probably, you know, will lose more vision, but probably won't affect you until later in life." And then when I was like 26, I continued to have problems from 18 to 26. And I went to see a specialist up at Chapel Hill Eye Center. And the doctor told me, "Well, Mr. Murphy, you're legally blind due to loss of peripheral vision. and you need to prepare for not driving. And that was shocking. I think I still was in denial because I still had such good central vision, even though I was down to like 15 degrees of peripheral vision. The average person has 170 degrees. So I was really had lost, you know, my side vision, my up and down vision. And, you know, it had to get me thinking then, well, even though I'm functioning okay, having some problems, but what's life going to be like 10 years down the road?
How old were you at that point, Steve?
I was 26 when I really, you know, was basically told you're going to go blind.
Up to that point, had you even thought about being accommodated? I mean, you were just living your life, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, we do things to survive. And I know when I was working as a warehouseman unloading trucks and boxcars, I noticed, you know, in the back of the truck, you know, it was really low light, and I had problem reading, like, numbers on the boxes. And at the drugstore, I saw a little magnifier with a light on it. And I said, well, you know, let me try that. And that worked out great. You know, I didn't realize I had come up with an accommodation. Didn't really know what that was. But
right.
I said, well, you know, let me try that. And it worked. And and that helped me solve that problem, but it didn't help me solve the problem of tripping over things and bumping into things and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, before I forget about it, I can see you in those shades. You do bear a resemblance to Roy Orbison, I think.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so with the sunglasses on, I bet you really, really did. But, okay, so you're 26 years old and you've gotten some news that life is going to be more challenging in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you do next?
Well, at that point, you know, I had to do some soul searching, you know, and still get through the denial of that this is really happening. And, you know, of course, that time it was reaching a point where driving was no longer fun. I rode a motorcycle. I played a lot of sports and was having some challenges doing some of those things. But from 26 to 28, you know, I discovered in talking with some friends and some mentors I had that really education was the answer. My main goal was, you know, I've got to work. I've got to be able to take care of myself and so forth. I just could not see myself sitting at home as a blind person. And reason this is so real to me is that I had a grandmother that was blind due to cataracts. And I remember as a small boy going to her house and, you know, she just sat around in a rocking chair for the most part. And I knew that was not a life for me. So between the age of 26 and 28, once I decided and made up my mind education was the answer, I worked hard to pay for all my toys I had bought, you know, motorcycles and cars and Jeeps and all that stuff. You know, I had a lot of toys. I worked a whole lot, but I had a lot of toys. You know, getting those paid off and getting to the point where I could actually put myself through college. And, you know, me saying I'm going to go to college at 26, 28 years old was very foreign to me. When I was in high school, my goal was to get out of high school, get a job where I didn't have to work nights and weekends and buy a new car. You know, I never studied, you know, I thought only rich people went to college, you know, had money to pay for tuition and fees. So I never had any idea of going to college. So at age 26, faced with that challenge, I said, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. And my dad raised me where, you know, he always said, Steve, you can do anything you want to do if you're willing to work hard and pay the price. It may take you twice as long, but if you have that mindset, you can do anything you want to do. So when I did start to college, you know, I drew out my retirement from the organization I worked with and started paying tuition fees, and I'll take it one day at a time. And when times got really tough, I would hear my dad tell me, son, you can do anything.
So you're in college. Where were you in college at?
Okay. I started off by going to Vance Gramble Community College. I went there for a year because, like I said, I've didn't have real good study skills, really didn't know much about college other than I knew I needed education. So I went there for a year, and I let pride get in the way. I didn't tell anyone I was visually impaired. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask for any accommodations or anything like that. You know, I just went to class and made sure I sit in the front row so I could see the board. And, of course, sometimes I still would miss stuff. So, you know, that went okay. I found out that if I went to class and did my homework, so I could do pretty well, you know, as long as I applied myself. And when I finished that first year at Vance Granville, I applied to Western Carolina University. And when I went there, the light bulb sort of come on in my head, and I had this voice tell me, well, Steve, you're sort of being stupid. You know, you're going to college to rehabilitate yourself, so you need to get all the assistance that you can. You know, you got to get over the pride. So one of the first things I did when I got there, I found out, you know, what the university could do. And they had a disability student services program. And I went there and talked to them, and they told me all these wonderful things they could do. And I said, well, gosh, this sounds really good. And that would include stuff like a note taker, even though I took my own notes all of the time I was in school. But sometimes the professor would put something on the blackboard and I might not be able to read it and I would miss it. So having a copy of someone else's notes really made a difference. Mm-hmm. And then the other main thing that I used was extended time on test. With my vision, even though I had fairly good central vision, it still took me a long time to read stuff because I was reading like one word at a time. I couldn't skim stuff quickly. So having that extra time really made a big difference. And there I was also introduced to some handheld magnifiers. And I actually used one of those while I was at Western to do a lot of my reading.
But, and, of course, you're like myself. You're a no spring chicken. And so this is pre-high-tech days, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So the
most that they had at that time was probably a video magnifier, or some people would call it a closed-circuit TV. And basically it looks like a computer monitor, and it has like an XY table underneath that you can lay materials, and it would enlarge it, and you could change the tint and the contrast, and that's what really helped me. And I was able to utilize one of those in the library. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of doing some of the research and stuff I had to do. But there I received my BS degree in psychology, bachelor's of science degree, but I typically refer to it as a BS degree because once I graduated, I found out, well, a psychology degree gives you a lot of experience or knowledge of understanding people, but what work skills do you have?
Right.
Or what does it prepare you for? So probably the lowest point in my life was once I got the college degree, was living in here in Raleigh, and I couldn't even get a job because I was overqualified for general labor-type jobs where you get your foot in the door and work your way up. And then others, like I wanted to work in human resources, and they were getting people with master's degrees.
So right.
I said, well, gosh, you know, I sold everything I had and put myself through the first 4 years. So, you know, once again, I had an old mentor that, gave me some good advice. In fact, a funny little story is when I graduated from Western, I was meeting with a friend of mine who was head of psychological services and at RLCB. And he said, Steve, there's a master's program in rehabilitation counseling with a specialty as vocational specialist for the blind and visually impaired in Mississippi. And I said, it's no way in the world I would ever go to Mississippi. You know, I want to go to work. Well, you know, that was like probably about May. And after spending the whole summer here in Raleigh not being able to find a job, by October, I rethought that. And that same friend came back and said, well, Steve, you know, if you get your master's, you'll have a lot more skills. You'll have a lot more to offer. So in October, you know, I got the application and wrote my essay and applied and interviewed and got accepted at Mississippi State. And they offered me a fellowship that paid for the tuition and fees. They gave me a stipend. And, you know, I was still single then, just had myself. So Got my dad and my brother. We packed myself up and moved me to Starksville, Mississippi, and dropped me off. So that was a little scary.
Did you get into the Ole Miss and Mississippi State rivalry very much?
I'll tell you a little funny story about that. My very first football game I went to was between those two. And when I got there, I think everyone in the stadium had a cowbell. Yeah. And they all was ringing it at the same time. And I said, well, if every game's going to be like this, I don't know I can take this. It was the loudest, noisiest place I've ever been in my life. But getting back to the education, that program was, I didn't know at the time, but the Rehabilitation Counseling Program was ranked in the top three in the nation at the time. Had no idea. And here I was fortunate enough to get a fellowship. And did a lot of growing, and Mississippi State offered me a lot of opportunities. I had a chance while working on my master's to work in disability student services and be able to assist other students, some individuals who were blind and visually impaired, but also students with other disabilities. And, you know, providing accommodations, providing counseling. And it was a great growing experience for me as I was going through those psychological stages of disability myself.
In the curriculum, did they have law classes? Did they talk about the ADA at all at that point?
Yes, we woven throughout the entire program. Of course, you know, ADA and the Rehabilitation Acts and so forth.
Right.
You know, were involved in there and. So, you know, we learned about that and how to apply it and mm-hmm. so forth. But that was probably one of the greatest experiences of my life and really got me on the pathway of working with persons who are blind and visually impaired.
So you got through, you got your master's degree.
Yes, sir.
What's the next step?
Well, at the end of the, let me say this. The program was a two-year program. And I went all the way through the summer and took extra classes, did all the coursework in those three semesters, and that would include, you know, summer school. And then the fourth semester, I did a graduate internship at Gardner-Webb University. And there they had a program where they provided services for the blind as well as the deaf population. And I had an opportunity of working with a great staff there and enhancing my skills. And I completed that in the summer of 88.
Okay.
And then started that job search again.
Okay.
And this time I had success. I actually got some interviews. And I think I interviewed about 12 or 13 times and actually got a job working with North Carolina Division of Services for the Blind as a rehab counselor in their Fayetteville office. And I actually had an option of working in Fayetteville or Asheville. And I chose Fayetteville just because it was close to where my dad lived.
Right. We've had a guest on that, Judy Gustafson from the Division of Vocational Rehab. Mm-hmm. Under the same umbrella as the Division for the Blind Services, but different, right?
Well, it's different in terms of the populations mm-hmm. that are served. They basically function the same way. The only difference is that services for the blind, let's talk about the VR program since mm-hmm. you mentioned that. They're the same as the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. It's just services for the blind has a specialized training for the blind and visually impaired. And some of those services might be orientation and mobility, teaching someone how to use a white cane to get around. Mm-hmm. It might be using assistive technology for the blind, like ZoomText or JAWS. ZoomText is a screen enlargement program, and JAWS is a software that enables the computer to talk as you do different various keystrokes on the computer. They have a rehab center that teaches people independent living skills, how to cook as a blind person, how to clean, all those things that you need to be able to do to get up and prepare for work. So as we would get individuals in, we would evaluate them to determine what their needs were. And, you know, someone might need just job placement assistance, or someone might need everything, which would include independent living training at the rehab center, you know, technology services, retraining such as me, you know, going back to school to re-educate myself to get into the workforce, and then, you know, provide job placement services and follow-up services. And even in that, you know, it could include restoration services if someone needed, you know, surgery for certain eye conditions. So really just, you know, the specific or the specialized services for the blind is the key difference. Everything else works the same.
So how long were you in Fayetteville?
I was there 7 years, and I covered two of the largest counties in the state, Robertson County and Sampson County. And probably some of the best people I ever met in the world was from Robertson County. Just great. The Native American population there, it was a mix. It was probably a third African American, maybe a third white, and a third Native Americans. And just really enjoyed that.
And so where did you go from there?
After that 7 years there in 1996, I applied for a management position in Raleigh with the North Carolina Division of Services for the Blind, and was fortunate enough to get that position as a district rehabilitation supervisor, and worked there the rest of my career. Worked there about 18 years. And with that, it sort of gave me the best of all worlds. It kept me where I could still work with consumers. It allowed me the opportunity to train counselors to provide those services and do the evaluations. You know, the hands-on work with the counselors were great. I was able to do a lot of agency training. I was able to work in reviewing case files on the state and federal level, and everything in between. Mm-hmm. I wore many, many hats. In fact, when we would interview for new counselors, I would describe the job as someone who is juggling many things at one time and scared to death you're going to drop something.
Right.
Because you went in so many different directions. And the other part, too, is if someone could learn to do that job well, it's nothing they couldn't do.
You've seen a lot of technological advances through the decades, Steve. Mm-hmm. What would you say is sort of the state of the art that it prevails now? What is out there for blind and visually impaired people?
Okay. Well, there's numerous really, really good screen enlargement programs. And, of course, you know, when I was started at school at that time, they had the closed-circuit TVs we talked about earlier and handheld magnifiers. And the very first screen reader, you know, I mentioned JAWS to you, I was introduced to it in 1987 at Gardner Webb. They had a program called Echo. And I'll tell you, if you didn't know what you were talking, it was such electronic speech, you would have no idea what it was saying. But I taught myself how to use that. And yeah, and after that, that's when JAWS, the acronym is Job Access with Speech. Job Access with Speech is what it is. But now, you know, all those programs have been enhanced so much. There's a product now called Fusion, and it's a combination of Zoom Text and JAWS. And what is good about that, if you have someone who has a progressive eye condition, they start off using a computer with the large print. And having the large print and the screen reader that can read stuff to you if you need it, it sort of gives you a smooth transition as your vision decreases. So it's not like, well, I go and learn how to use Zoom Text on my job, then my vision deteriorates, and then I got to leave work and go back and retrain. this is one of those packages, Fusion, where you get that package, you learn it, and you usually use it no matter where your vision is. The other thing that is really, really good now is the closed circuit TVs. They have them now where they can actually scan documents for you. You can download them into the computer from the closed circuit TV. They have them where you can connect to computers and you can have it full computer screen, or you can have it full CCTV screen, or you can have it where the computer screen is split, where you have the document you're trying to read under the closed circuit TV, maybe on the bottom, and what you're trying to type into on the top of the screen. And then, you know, scanners, and I guess what people use now more so than anything else is the iPhone and iPad.
Mm-hmm.
That has really been a great technology. The iPad where, you know, we were talking about note takers and stuff like that. With an iPad, you can put apps on it that you can actually hold up and enlarge something at a distance. So you could hold it up to the blackboard and actually see it on your screen. It would be the camera, the front-facing camera would actually enlarge what is on the blackboard. You could take your notes with it. You could transfer, you know, cut and paste stuff from that into a Word document or into a document that, you know, you're doing a paper or something. The iPhone, I don't know what my life would be without it right now. I use it for appointments, you know, for scheduling all of my appointments. I just do it by talking to it. You know, alarms, reminders. As I get older, I need more reminders, so that's a great feature on it. You can send emails and do texting from your phone. You can do web searches. It's like taking your computer where you want to go.
Well, Steve, we've run out of time. If somebody wants to get up with you in your official capacities, how would they do that?
Well, I can provide you my phone number, which is 919-231-6655. Even though I am retired, I still wear those resource hats. You know, I have people call me all the time regarding resources. And then I'm also the project specialist with Insightful Visionaries. And we do a lot of work regarding events and, you know, providing resources and so forth. So they call me at that number, 919-231-6655. I would be glad to help anyone that I can, because I had a lot of people help me along the way.
Thank you, Steve. That's Steve Murphy, and a great guest. And thank you so much for joining us today, Steve.
You're welcome.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters, but be sure to tune in next time, fourth Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m. I'm Joe Austin, your host for Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. After its broadcast, you can readily find it as a podcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org, where you'll be able to listen to it again and share it with others.